Welcome to Responsible Management. This is a podcast from the University of Bradford School of Management for our Knowledge Transfer Network. My name is David Spicer. I'm the school's Director of Business and Community Engagement. I'm the host of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by two great contributors, and we're going to be talking about sales and marketing for SMEs. Our first contributor is Paul Stallard. Paul is CEO of Herndorf Stallard Associates Limited, a business strategy, business development and marketing communications consultancy specialising in retail financial services. Paul works with top UK and international brands in all aspects of financial services and has a particular interest in the role of technology in marketing. Our second contributor is Dr. Ola Bede. Ola is Assistant Professor of Marketing and International Business and Director of the Undergraduate Studies Programme here at the School of Management. Her main research interests are in disruption, innovation, organisational strategy and international business, and marketing management, and she has commercial experience in both UK and Nigeria. Paul, Ola, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, given our focus on responsible management, we'll start with the same question. So what does responsible management mean for you, Paul?
It sounds a bit contrite, but to my mind, I always think of it in terms of management that cares about other people, be they customers or other stakeholders in the whole process or the industry they're in, and the world in which we live, basically.
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree. I think when I think of responsible management, I think of managers or individuals that take conscious decisions. So conscious decisions that show care, not just for themselves or their primary stakeholders, but also for the community, for people outside of, you know, their normal stakeholders. So some people that would call like non-market actors. So the community, the society, the environment.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And I guess that feeds into our practice in respect of sales and marketing. You know, I'm sat here thinking about pension mis-selling and all the really interesting stuff in the election period around the way in which messages are presented in election leaflets and all the misrepresentative bar charts that are kind of going on. So I guess there's a responsibility in how we communicate in terms of our marketing as well.
Well, very much so. And I think one of the challenges, particularly in banking and financial services, is the products can be typically very, very difficult to understand in terms of how they work. And I'm forever telling banks I work with that you have to understand your customers have other things to think about than interest rates and products and mortgages. They have lives to lead, but it gets steeped in jargon and you're forever trying to remove the jargon and say, well, what does that mean? Clarity and consistency.
Absolutely. And since you've spoken about services, so I lead an interactive services marketing module here at the University of Bradford. And as you've said, one thing that really can be difficult, especially when it comes to services. So it's different if it's a product where you can describe, you know, the tangible bits and what that does. But when it comes to services, because they are inherently intangible, it's quite tricky. And a good thing that I would just like to reiterate is how important it is to understand the consumer needs. What will your service do to satisfy a need? How will it improve the life of the final user? Or maybe not just the final user, but other people around. So yeah, definitely.
Well, spinning off that idea of services and producing good for consumers, one of the big problems we have as a country is that we have so few financial advisors to look after 50 million adults. There are less than 35,000 financial advisors to give advice to people, particularly students when they leave university and go into work. And who will advise them about pensions and how they start saving and the importance of the longevity of that savings process? Because when they do retire eventually, if they ever do, it's a huge problem. They'll realize I really should have saved more money early on.
And just thinking about that, really, sometimes we don't see the important role that organizations can play in educating customers. So since we're looking at banking and financial services, you would think or expect that responsible management for a banking or a bank will mean that they can educate customers, educate young people who really need guidance.
Precisely.
We really need guidance on things like savings, investment. And many times it's, you get this information or guidance by watching YouTube videos, but but actually firms can play a much bigger role because of the coverage they have, because of the brand name, because of the reach they have in really educating customers.
So sorry to interject, but I'm just going to put a callback in there. So it resonates with some of the themes we discussed in an earlier podcast. We had Jelena, who is a financial advisor, and George Medine, who's a colleague here at the university. And we were talking in that about how financial literacy and kind of confidence in that regard actually affects kind of health and well-being.
It does.
Yeah, as part of that as well.
Hugely so. I'm involved in a huge research project around vulnerability with another university. And vulnerability is a massive, massive issue that we've only in the past decade begun to take much notice of. And it's a huge problem. What interests me in particular is the intermittent nature of vulnerability these days. Because everyone in a declining economy, when business and the economy is not doing well, people start to think, well, am I going to lose my job? And suddenly, technically, they become vulnerable because they've got a huge mortgage with rising interest rates. And it's a fascinating process that we need to do more work about.
Definitely, definitely. That sounds like a topic for another one of these. We'll have to come back to that. Our focus is on sales and marketing, particularly for kind of SMEs. So does being a smaller business mean that you have to think or work differently in terms of how you engage and approach your customers?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's the most important thing. When I help small businesses, and I do a lot, the conversation we have first and foremost is always around customers. And seeing how much they understand customers, not just in terms of who they are, in terms of what profile they meet demographically, but what do their customers use their product for? Why do they use it? When do they use it? The classic tools of any brand or project manager in a product management expert in a huge organization, it applies to a small organization to crucial information.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that in terms of the marketing strategies, it would be the same process of understanding who your customers are, understanding what you are even offering to your customers or consumers, how they can use that, and then developing a strategy to reach those customers, communicate with them clearly and consistently about what your service or your product will be offering, and then building that relationship. I think that building relationships with consumers actually plays a very, very important role.
Yeah, there's a great temptation of new businesses to start selling. I've got this idea, let me go and sell. The problem with that is, more often than not, they're trying to sell to people who've never heard of them. So my number two item go-to piece of advice is build a strong online presence, because as soon as you present yourself to a potential customer or in a networking environment, someone will go and look at your website.
Yeah, yeah. And just, you know, it starts with the consumers not knowing anything about you, almost like a stranger. And then exactly. The idea is really that you introduce your brand or your organization or your service to them, get to know them, let them get to know you. And then it just builds naturally, just the same way friendship, for example.
Yes, might it does. Build. It's effort because you start leveraging social media outlets then and learn how to do that, because it's not easy to everyone. I mean, if your mindset isn't that way inclined, then you have to learn how to use those tools, but they're massively important.
In my head, at least, there's a tension. So a lot of the small firms I know, they work through referrals, they work through word of mouth. Their marketing is fairly low-key, and they almost don't know where to start. A phrase like, you need to build an online presence, could be quite scary, because what does that mean? How do I go about that? And what's it going to cost? I've never met a small business who isn't thinking about the kind of the costs of kind of everything. So there's something in this about how do we convince people of the value of investing in kind of sales and marketing activities, and moving from that sort of anecdotal approach to business and referrals, which is great, into a more, we use the word, strategic approach in that regard.
Now, first and foremost, investing is not about spending money. Yeah. Marketing is not about spending money. Investing is investing in your time. You can build a website, use WordPress and build your own website. It won't be very good, but as time goes by, as you develop that skill, you can produce a really, really good website, particularly as you understand what triggers to pull with your customers, what pain points they have, what needs they have, and you start. You never leave it alone. You're always in and out of changing the communication on your websites, and so you should do.
Yeah, I would say a common misconception might be that marketing is expensive and that if a small business wants to do anything in terms of marketing, they might be looking at what established brands are doing and then start comparing themselves. But you've said something very simple. There are a ton of tools that can be used in terms of building websites, and also creating an online presence can be something as simple as a LinkedIn page, a Facebook page, an Instagram page. It may seem daunting depending on the kind of background that people have. However, there are little steps that can be taken to build
absolutely
marketing and sales.
Yeah, definitely.
What are those steps, I guess, from a kind of practical perspective? If I'm a small business who's grown through referrals, grown through word of mouth, maybe not had a website yet, what are the kind of the first two or three things you would say to look at?
Initially, it's all about positioning in terms of what is it, what need is it that you're satisfying, what's the pain point to someone, and then working that pain point backwards in terms of a proposition. And as soon as you build a proposition, you begin to develop a proposition because it may change, or you may need to change it because it's not quite right. It's what is it that you're doing, understanding. I mean, years ago, it used to be the elevator pitch. You've got 30 seconds to tell me what your business is. It's focusing on that. And people do have to understand what they're good at. And that's an investment in time and thinking. But it begins with that initial proposition. What need are you satisfying, or problem are you solving for your customers? Who are they?
It's important to know where your consumers spend most of their time. Mm-hmm. So say, for example, if the consumers that you're targeting are millennials or very young and spend a lot of time on social media, then it would be helpful building up on knowing what your product or your service is, knowing who the consumers are, and then seeing the best channels or avenues to reach them. So that might be digital. However, it might also be traditional. It might also be newspapers. It might be radio. If the target audience are people who drive to work, drive back home, spend 1 or 2 hours on the road, it might be out of home. So I think what you really said is very important, Paul, about knowing who your consumers are, understanding what your product is.
It's interesting, because think of a couple of examples. I think it might reinforce the point. So somebody else I was speaking to recently, and they were saying about, I need to get on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram because that's what you've got to do. And it was, is that where your consumers are? I know everybody thinks that, but is that where your consumers are? And that's a really important message. And similarly, running recently a simulation, a business game with some of our students, and a part of that business game is they have to decide on the marketing strategy. They have to decide how much they're going to invest in different channels. And this group of students, they put all of their money into social media. Why wouldn't you? Because we're all on social media. In fact, I'm on my phone while I'm doing this as well. So that's where everybody else will be. And then they were surprised when their sales tanked. And it's like, well, hang on, who's your consumer? Yeah, it's a really important message.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, a really good example to illustrate that point. There's a robo investment company. It's giving you advice robotically, automatically. So they accept what your risk is, your money, and they go off and invest money on your behalf. And 2.5 years after this company had launched, and they'd made all the headlines, they were really, really smart, got lots and lots of customers, hundreds and thousands. They rang me up and said, "Would you like to come and see us, would you?" And I said, "Why?" "Well, our sales have dropped up, just dried up. There's nothing coming in." "So do you know why?" And they said, "No, have you been doing any marketing?" "And we haven't spent a penny on marketing." "Right, straight away. So you've got no pipeline. You've got no one in the orbit of your company who isn't automatically a buyer of what you do, but they're thinking about it. And don't forget, you're asking them to invest a minimum of £10,000, and no one will give anyone they've never heard of £10,000 to look after. That's just silly." And they had no notion whatsoever that this was a requirement.
Oh dear. It's so important to create that awareness of your brand, or service or product, even if it's not with your primary consumers, but just having a general awareness or making sure that people are aware that you are there, even if they're not directly purchasing or consuming your product or service, is so important. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think the economic climate is a factor in this? Inflation is coming down, but it's not quite back down to where it was. And we probably won't be back to stagnation levels, which we probably don't want, truth be told. But cost of living crisis, the pressures that's putting on consumers and on firms, is that influencing practice? Is that having to get people to think differently, more creatively, do less, do more? I don't know. Don't know what the response is. I guess that's my question.
I think it does make them think, and it should make them think, because any small business has to get used to the idea that for as long as their business is around, they are going to be faced with a lot of change and a lot of uncertainty. So it's that process that they learn very early on to listen to what's going on in their orbit of influence, or that they have no influence over whatsoever, such as interest rates, and change their strategy, their actions. Strategies are actions, the things they do. They may have to change the things they do and the way they do them. And that's a good thing, because it will come again.
Yes, it will. So they need to be very adaptive. They need to respond quickly to changes, especially those. Sometimes you can see some changes coming, but sometimes it catches everyone by surprise. But if a sort of resilience has been developed within an organization such that they've gotten used to constantly changing, constantly innovating, I think that would be helpful in cases like this.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. I mean, you've mentioned the robo-investor. Yeah, I'm not sure I want to get my investment advice off the Terminator. But anyway. But I'm kind of interested, have you got any other examples? Have you think of firms that have perhaps done a good job as SMEs of kind of cutting through from a kind of marketing perspective?
Or... Very, very much so. Another wealth management company that focuses on doing everything they do very well indeed. The best they can possibly... there are no shortcuts taken. So when they promise a customer, they say to a customer, we're going to do this for you, you can bet your house on the fact they will do it. If they're organising a SIP for you and you want to put a number of pensions that you have in a SIP, for example, a self-invested personal pension scheme, they will take, all they need from you is the number, the account number of that particular pension you have and whose it's with, and there can be six of them. And you have to give them 12 pieces of information. And what they'll do is send you a letter and say, right, on this day, this will happen. On that day, that will happen. And it will. The interesting thing about them, and I'm asked constantly about them, is why are they the most expensive financial advisor, wealth management company in the country? And the answer to that is because they say they will do what they say they will. You can rely on them. So it's worth paying that price. If they make me 15% in a year and I'm having to pay them 1%, who cares? I'm money in. That's how people think.
Yeah, and an example that comes to mind. So I've worked with the CEO of an advertising agency, still for that module that I mentioned, the interactive services marketing module. Mm-hmm. And what that company has done based in Leeds is that because it's an SME, the CEO has had to create a very strong online presence, what we were talking about, and not just an online presence for herself, but also for the organization, and making conscious efforts to attend events, activities, conferences. We've spoken a lot about networking and referrals. And so, yes, that has really helped. And another thing that was quite innovative that was introduced was a 4-day working week. So that marketing agency implemented the 4-day working week. And after implementing it, their sales, their income also increased. So I think for that example, I would say that the leadership of the organization, of the SME, has played such an integral role in terms of expanding, gaining connections both nationally and internationally, and maybe taking some risks, you know, because there's a lot of debate, as we may be aware, about the 4-day working week, but that seemed to pay off.
Very much so. I think I might know who you're talking about.
Okay. And
it's classic leadership. It is absolute leadership, because this person is not only thinking about external customers, but they know they have internal customers, because that's an industry where people are forever leaving and joining other organizations, or they get paid golden hellos, you know, money to go and join another organization. But it will make their employees stick, which is what they want.
Couple of things in that struck me. One was about the differentiated piece, and it's back to your point that you made it earlier on, Paul, about really got to know what your business is about and what you do and why somebody's going to engage with you and ultimately buy from you. But that's not just in the products and service offering, but it's also in how you operate as well. The other bit, which is kind of the kind of question I wanted to come back to, is how important is the marketing of the business versus the marketing of the individual? Because I'm sort of avoiding the word entrepreneur, because, you know, not every small business owner is an entrepreneur, but we very much associate small businesses with the CEO, the person at the center, usually the founder. Yeah. So do you market yourself, or do you market the business, or how do you manage the two?
You most definitely market yourself, even though it isn't a conscious thought. There are a lot of people out there who thought, there's no way I know anything about marketing, but every day they go out and make contact with other people, customers or any other stakeholder, you know they're marketing their business, and they are marketers. And a lot of them do it really, really well. They do. They're very good.
Yeah, I'll say both. Be diplomatic. Yeah. I think that in marketing yourself, you actually tend to market your organization. Yeah. But what you find sometimes is that because people know someone, they feel someone is credible, maybe based on an interaction or based on word of mouth, then they are willing to find out more about the organization that person represents. So I'll say both, because sometimes we find some organizations that only focus on the founder or CEO, and then there's not much information about what the organization actually does. Yeah. So that's why I'd say both.
So obviously people will be looking for help and support and guidance on this. So how can we help and support? What do your organisations do to kind of promote and support sales and marketing activities?
Well, from my point of view, I run a number of programmes for SMEs where we sit down and talk about the key issues they should address. Don't overcomplicate that process. As I said, I've got three key issues for someone who's just starting out. And one is to define your target audience. The second is to build an online presence. And the third one is networking. Because building a pipeline of potential customers is the most important thing. And if you work with me on a regular basis, every day I want to know how many new people you've spoken to or you've connected with, because that's how you build your pipeline. Because otherwise it will cost you a lot of money. If you start advertising, spending money to acquire customers, silly. Wealth management companies can pay £900,000 for each new client they speak to, because the advertising to that marketplace is very expensive. So if you're a small business, do a lot of networking, go to places you never think possible, and always have a business card and ask them for information. I mean, that's another point. If you don't know what a good online presence is, go and find someone in a networking environment who does and ask them what they did, because they will tell you. That's the beauty of it. They will tell you.
Yeah. So from my perspective, at the University of Bradford, I work with a number of businesses. And so as a university, we do have academics that work with small businesses. I know Dave will probably say a lot more about that. But from my perspective, we also have students that work with businesses. Mm. So if you feel like you need help, we have students, final year students, who undergo or undertake a company project, and I've supervised some of those myself. We have academics that can provide some sort of consultancy services, and I will leave the rest to Dave.
Well, those will probably be the, I mean, there's obviously, we run programs, we run events. You guys know you've been involved, our Knowledge Transfer Network and other activities like that. So we would always say reach out and kind of get in touch. And even if something doesn't immediately resonate, get in touch and have a conversation and we can see how we help. A big part of that help I would come back to is the students as a resource, though. We've got our final years and then later in the year, our MSc students, they work on applied projects for all sorts of businesses. But a lot of those are marketing related, aren't they? They're InVeg students looking at new markets, at how to reach particular consumer groups and how to kind of grow markets. Those can be quite impactful. I can think of one student from this year who's worked with a charity, and she's helped, and the work that they do links into the NHS, she's been absolutely instrumental in helping them build links into the NHS on that kind of basis. So that all comes with wraparound support from our kind of academics as well. So yeah, using the resource that we've got is definitely something I would kind of encourage people to absolutely do. And now is the time to get in touch for that as well, because we are looking for projects.
But a lot of that advice that you give doesn't necessarily stay or should stay with students. This morning, for example, I've done a new market strategy, built a discussion around creating a new market strategy for a major bank in the Middle East. So the board of directors are looking at the market, looking at major trends, and they're thinking, are there any new markets for us? So they're going to get someone like me who can look at the world and say, well, this is what people are doing, and break it down. How many SMEs will realize that a big bank, a multinational bank, is doing the same thing that you're suggesting to them? Well, it's true. That's how they survive.
Yeah, and just thinking on the back of that, so in that same module that I take, I work with Bradford Bowes, and what we've done with the students is that they've created a marketing strategy that is going to be implemented with Bradford Bowes, and the presentations are happening next week. So it's really, as you said, not just staying with the students, but actually making an impact in the organization. And so at the University of Bradford, we do have those kind of opportunities as well.
Very good.
And certainly, if there's a, I'll get that plug in as well. If there are businesses that would like to be that embedded and work closely with us on a module, we'd be delighted to kind of hear from you on that front as well. What's your kind of your practical advice, your kind of takeaways? So if people are going to step away from listening to us and then they're going to take their first two or three steps in terms of developing and improving what they do in sales and marketing, what would you recommend?
Number one, get a description of what you do, a water cooler pitch or... You know, the idea that you've got 30 seconds to tell somebody what you do. Make sure that's clear. Know who you're doing business with. And then build a pipeline. Build a pipeline. Find people. May not necessarily buy from you, but in my world, they will at some time.
Yeah, I think I'd say it's important to take some level of risks, maybe not super high risk, but calculated risk. And don't be afraid to make mistakes. And also reach out to, Dave has mentioned, Paul has mentioned, and I've mentioned quite a number of resources, people that you can reach out to. Reach out and ask questions, seek help. Yeah,
brilliant. Thank you both. Final question, and it's a little bit shift in tone. I'll warn you now, but we've been asking all of our contributors over this series, who's your management hero? So that can be personal or professional, somebody who's perhaps inspired or influenced you the most in your career.
A man called Peter Hargreaves. He ran a business called Hargreaves Lansdown. And Peter is a really, really bright and grounded CEO. He's retired now, God bless him. But the thing about Peter was he knew his customers. He knew customers inside out. And that paid dividends because he's worth a few billion pounds now, having built an enormous business and sold it on the stock market. But if you saw him in front of people, and when he finished speaking, if you saw the queue of people who wanted to talk to him, then you'd realise what leadership is.
For me, an academic that I worked with at the University of Leeds, his name is Professor Nathaniel Boso. I think the major thing that really strikes me about the responsible management is the care that is shown to the people around. So it's one thing to do a job, but it's another thing to go over and beyond in terms of caring for the people, not just for their professional lives, as it were, but also looking out for their welfare and their interest. And as we said at the beginning, we said responsible management is taking a conscious effort to care for those around you and also for the wider society. So that would be it for me.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, both. If people want to reach out to you, kind of contact you directly, is the way they can do that, Paul?
Well, strangely enough, and oddly, for all I've said, I haven't got a website. Because I'm a marketing man who doesn't believe in spending money. And after my business is 20 years old this year. And I've never spent a money on advertising because I've done everything to avoid spending. And I won't have a website because I don't need it. Because I get referrals. So why do I spend money?
That's where we started.
Back to where we started.
Yes, if you do want to talk to Paul, contact us. Contact, I think it's probably the easiest way to suggest that. Olu.
My details are on the University of Bradford website, and so you'd find my email address, phone number, and my office number, so I can be reached.
Yeah, you will get hold of me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn as well.
I know we can find you on LinkedIn, Paul. So, yeah, great. Thank you very much, both of you. Really enjoyed the conversation. Obviously, you want to reach out to us here at the university. It's at Brad Management, or I'm at Dave P. Spicer on the social media platform formerly known as Twitter. Ex-Twitter, as somebody described it to me the other day, which I sort of quite like that one. The email to contact us is BACE, that stands for Business and Community Engagement, BACE@bradford.ac.uk. or go to the business community pages on the web. We really hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Obviously, if you have enjoyed it, if you can like it, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, that would be great as well. Thank you very much, both. If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourselves. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.